Local, marketing for small business. Episode 91.
And there's no stopping us right now. I feel so close to you right now.
Welcome to Act Local, marketing for small business with your host, Kaylin Amadio. Kaylin helps smart, savvy, and motivated business owners like you kick it up a notch online, even if you've tried and been disappointed before, or technology just isn't your thing. Act Local will leave you with more ideas, more understanding, and more knowledge about why and how harnessing the internet gives you the power to bring your business to the next level. Whether you need help with online media, social media, video, or mobile marketing, Act Local will guide you into the 21st century with easy tips, tricks, and techniques that get your local business seen and heard. Each week, Kaylin features a new tip you can use today, as well as a range of guest experts who are passionate about helping local business owners thrive. And now here's your host, digital media maven, Kaylin Amadio.
Welcome to Act Local Marketing for Small Business, episode 91. I'm Kaylin Amadio, and I am your trainer here in the Act Local Marketing Classroom. I want to start today's show by thanking all of you. Episode 91 is the first show for September of 2014, but in August, we had a record-breaking download for this little podcast. That's now 2 years old. We hit 2 years this August. Over 90,000 downloads in August of 2014, which is nothing to sneeze at, my friends, and for which I give you a really heartfelt thank you. Thank you for listening each week, and hopefully I help you move your business further into prosperity. You don't have to miss a single episode of Act Local when you can find the podcast feed at actlocalmarketing.com. That is where I post a new lesson every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen to any training sessions directly on the website there, or subscribe and download on iTunes or Stitcher. Every episode to date, all 91 episodes, are available to help you build a thriving business. So please take advantage. Every week, I bring you a new guest expert to help you grow your business. And I always put in my bag of tricks a new strategy that I like to call today's takeaway, where you get at least one action item that you can walk away with today, implement, and grow your business. It's just my way of saying thanks, and I'm glad you're here, because that is what it's all about here at Act Local Marketing, sharing the high-quality inside information you can use to improve your business. And on that note, today I am speaking with a sales expert. If you own your business, then my assumption is, and please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but my assumption is you want to make money. That is what today's guest is going to help you do. So stay tuned. You know, last week I asked a similar question, and it still seems appropriate again this week. So here goes. What do you think of when you hear the word sales? Oh, so many of you think sales as a job is icky, or that to be a salesman is a bad thing. We have attached so many negative connotations to the word sales that it is an obstacle for lots of you. The problem with that is when you start a business, you often wear all of the hats, especially in the beginning, and that includes the sales hat. The hard truth many entrepreneurs must learn is without sales, there is no business. You have to make peace with sales. If you're a solopreneur, sales is part of what you do to make your business successful. So get over it. The first step you have to take is getting over the fact that you are in sales. Sales isn't dirty and it isn't evil. Sales is what makes the economy move. You simply need to find your place in the cycle, then learn and practice the right functions to create success. So let's discuss today's takeaway. I promised you an action item that you could take with you now to grow your business. And here it is. You know how much I love Entrepreneur Magazine. I do talk about it all the time. I reference it all the time on the podcast here because there is a wealth of information for business people to find on their website and in the print magazine, which I do subscribe to, by the way. I'm not all digital. I do subscribe to some print magazines. But at entrepreneur.com, they have a section of the website that shares sales tips of the week. And I want to share the May 18th, 2014 entry with you that was written by contributor Barry Farber called, "Are Your Customers Getting the Real You? Use These 7 Tips to Make Sure." This article will put you in the right mindset for today's guest. So tip number one, if there are two versions of you, the salesperson and the civilian, people will see you as disingenuous. There must only be one you. Tip two, relate to people exactly as you are. Imperfections are not seen as reasons not to do business with you. Just the opposite, in fact, your willingness to be transparent is seen as vindication that you are the genuine article, a trustworthy individual. Tip three, tell your clients and prospects what they don't want to hear when you believe that the painful medicine will be in their best interest. They may be upset with the messenger in the moment of truth, but you will stand out from any yes men when the dust settles. Now, tip number four, always carry yourself with great pride, knowing that a salesperson is a prince of the company. Others can work the books and make the factory hum, but as IBM founder Tom Watson said, nothing happens unless a sale is made. Tip number five, prospects are not doing you a favor by making time to see you. The author writes, "I always view it as their good fortune to see me. I have ideas. I bring solutions, experience, and knowledge. I'm not there for favors. I'm there to help grow their business." So tip number six is sell yourself before you enter an initial meeting. Send the prospect a copy of an award, a media clip, a paper you wrote, anything that distinguishes you as a person of importance and authority. By establishing your credentials in advance, you're going to change the entire dynamic of the meeting. And finally, tip number seven, remind yourself that prospects need you even more than you need them. They are the ones with needs. You are the one with the solutions. Did you like that? Did it inspire you to think differently about sales? Well, today's guest is going to teach us even more about sales success. But that is today's takeaway. If you have any questions about the lesson today, you know you can send an email to ask@actlocalmarketing.com. Before I introduce my guest, I ask you to connect with me. Go to actlocalmarketing.com and follow the social media links to me so that I can meet you. Use the hashtag #ActLocalMarketing to continue the conversation as you hear it here on the podcast. And do me a favor and tell your social media followers, your networking friends about Act Local. It would be fantabulous if you subscribed. And please do leave me a review in iTunes. Those reviews help us get noticed at the iTunes store and let us help more business owners like you fix this economy of ours by growing their businesses. A thriving business generates a prosperous local economy, and that's what I want to see happen. So we are going to take a quick break, and when we return, Matthew Pollard is stepping to the front of the room. Stay tuned.
Act Local is the place where busy entrepreneurs like you gain more ideas, more understanding, and more knowledge about why and how harnessing the internet gives them the power to bring their business to the next level. Kaylin returns after a short break with more strategies and techniques to develop your inner warrior. We'll be right back.
At iKaylin.com, we believe effective marketing requires knowledge of all the systems and tools available. Good marketing takes planning and strategy. The if you build it, they will come approach only works in Hollywood movies, not in the real world, and absolutely not online. You are a real-world business owner, and you need real-world business solutions for your marketing. It doesn't have to be difficult or time-consuming to work. Our Five Secrets strategy allows us to see what your business needs to prosper in the here and now, 21st century world of massive communication challenges. At iKalin.com, we craft custom strategies for every client that are not too big and not too little, but just right for you, your business, and your budget. Visit iKalin.com/secrets for a free report that shares what the five secrets to marketing online can do for your business.
So close to you right now.
Welcome to Act Local, marketing for small business with your host, Kaylin Amadio. Kaylin helps smart, savvy, and motivated business owners like you kick it up a notch online, even if you've tried and been disappointed before, or technology just isn't your thing. Act Local will leave you with more ideas, more understanding, and more knowledge about why and how harnessing the internet gives you the power to bring your business to the next level. And now here's your host, digital media maven, Kaylin Amadio.
Welcome back. This is Act Local, marketing for small business. And as promised, I want to introduce you to today's guest, Matthew Pollard. He is a sales coach whose innovative approaches to sales, sales management, and marketing have earned him numerous awards, including the 2007 Young Achiever Award. He has extensive experience in telecommunications, having founded an independent telecommunications company that went national in 3 years, turning over $4 million a year. He is the creator of a sales method for the Pollard Institute, which has enrolled over 3,000 students. And Matthew is a paid speaker and currently gives seminars and lectures to business men and women around the world. And you'll understand that when you hear him speak. Matthew, welcome to Act Local Marketing.
Thanks very much.
So people are going to wonder where you're from. I told you that I'm from New York, but Matthew, although we were just chatting before the show that he has moved to the United States. Where are you originally from?
I'm from Melbourne, Australia. So I'll apologize up front for the occasional Australian slang that I use, and feel free to ask, what am I talking about?
Perfect. No, Americans love Australian accents. I don't know what it is, but we really like them.
Yes. No, I've noticed that it's a country that many people want to visit. So I'm always hammered with questions about the country and the people. But it's very similar to the United States in everything, really. It's almost like just an additional state.
Interesting. You know, my maid of honor lives in the Sydney area. I haven't visited her, so I don't know exactly where, but she lives in the Sydney area. She's American, and so is her husband. But at one point, and it's got to be, I'm going to guess, 15 to 20 years ago, they moved to Sydney for business, and they ended up, you know, having their children and raising their children. They still live there, and they absolutely love it.
I think it's a common thing to happen. A lot of people from England will travel to Australia, and a lot of people from the US travel to Australia. However, a lot of Australians also travel to London and travel to places in the US. I think it's the ability to be able to trial a whole different culture that's similar to your own but different in many ways is, you know, it's very popular for a lot of people to do. I mean, while often very similar to back home in Melbourne, it still has a plethora of different things that, you know, every day surprise me. So it's a good experience and something that if you can try, I think everybody should.
Well, I promise this will be my last question about Australia, because that's not really what our interview is about today. But if I were going to travel to Australia to vacation, what's the optimum amount of time that I should do? Because I know it's a 24-hour flight or something like that from here.
Yeah.
So
what
length of vacation?
Depending on whether you're on a budget, yeah. So, look, it can average anywhere from 20 hours to 30 hours, depending on how much money you want to save on your flight. However, the optimum amount of time is really about, you know, you don't want to be spending less than sort of 2 weeks. You want to be, you know, you need a few days in Sydney to see Darling Harbour and Sydney Harbour Bridge. You know, all the things, the picture postcards, the things that you see on TV in America that Australia is well known for. You
right.
definitely want to spend some time in Melbourne. Melbourne is kind of less publicized than Sydney is. However, it's the place where you go for your culture and your music experiences and the best restaurants in Australia, in my view. And then you can't obviously not go and see the Queensland beaches and the Whitsundays. Those are massive things that you just need to spend a few days sort of spending some time. Just pick one. So really 2 weeks will do that. And then if you're really into wine, I'd add an extra week because you want to go to Barossa Valley, McLaren Vale, and Margaret River, which are some of the best wine estates in the world, in my view. So
excellent.
2 to 3 weeks, and that is if you decide not to go to New Zealand, which you really should because it's just
while you're over there,
road, so.
Right? While you're over there, you might as well. Okay. So I need a month
trip.
Is what you're telling me.
I'd spend a lifetime there, but yeah, sure, a month will do.
Perfect. All right, let's talk some business now. That's enough. That's on my bucket list. I'm gonna travel to that other side of the world one of these days. But let's talk about business and sales. I know your bailiwick part of it is really about sales and the sales process, which is something that a lot of small businesses and solo practitioners, you know, they can really struggle with. So
Definitely, it is.
Yeah, tell me, you know, we often, one of the things I don't know about your business background in Australia, but in the United States, there are networking groups, right? Business networking groups. And people go to a weekly meeting, you know, it's usually early in the morning, and they get to know one another and they pass leads around in these groups. Oh, you know, I know somebody and they mentioned this and why don't you call them? You know, when should we be picking up the phone and calling these leads?
Well, my honest opinion is you should always pick up the phone and call these leads. The bottom line with small business, and I've coached and I've educated thousands of small business owners, and one of the major things that they have is a fear of picking up the phone and making a phone call, because everyone knows that it's scary to be a salesperson. Everybody knows you have to have that natural ability, and if you don't, then you just can't be a salesperson. And that's not true. I mean, a lot of these people are functional businesses. So they may be an accountant, they may be a lawyer, they may be a plumber, and all these people have spent years learning their trade. They spent years going out and learning, getting a degree and getting practice to be good at what they do. And then they go out and they decide, oh, I need to find customers. I have no idea how to do that. Sales is hard. It's not that it's hard. It's that most people don't spend the time learning it like they would anything else. So just for the point of practicing this, I would suggest that it's highly important. But secondly, the ability to create that muscle of picking up the phone and talking to people, in my view, is one of the most important skill sets and the most important things to build into your day that any business could possibly have. It is one of the major factors, or if not the primary factor, in my view, for why businesses succeed or fail.
That's interesting. I think a lot of people believe that when they're picking up the phone to speak to that lead, that they're specifically trying to have a sales call.
Look,
is that true?
Definitely it can be. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, you talk about my background. I mean, when I first started, I was a door-to-door salesperson, and I was probably one of the worst ones out there at it. I walked into 93 doors before my first sale, and that was 93 people that did not expect for me to sell them something. They thought I was a customer, and next thing they knew, I was trying to sell them something. It becomes a learned skill and a practice skill, and you become more comfortable at it. A lot of people say it's uncomfortable. That's why they avoid it. Now, when you call a lead, especially one that you get from a networking group, the prerogative is to get straight into the sales call. The best thing to do is to first explain that you had been speaking to whoever gave you the card and they suggested that you called. And this is why. Now, I mean, when they go to networking events, frequently the first thing they do is they develop, or if they haven't, they really should, a bit of an elevator pitch.
Right.
And from that, you should transition that into a script that basically you can improve every single time to get better and better results every time you make one of these calls. So the reason why I suggest you should always call them is what you want to be doing is you want to be writing down everything that you say and improving it and improving it. So every phone call is practice. However, the focus, in my view, would be, as well as that, is to introduce yourself and organize times to meet. And a lot of times people will say, well, you know, I don't want to be going out and visiting all of these customers for no reason. That's because you haven't had enough practice as a salesperson. If you learn the skill sets and the strategies towards being a salesperson, then you'll be able to sell once you're there, or on the phone, if you just do over the phone sales, you should be able to transition and then go through a question process or a question cipher to get a person's needs out there. And a lot of times in networking events, the reason why they suggest people is because somebody listed a need. So it's always, in my view, okay to pick up the phone and call them. I come from the background where you pick up the phone to people that you weren't given cards to and talk to them. So having their card and having an entry point, you're 10 steps ahead.
Wow. All right. So you had brought up the word scripting. I do not have a sales background, but I know that in certain companies, especially if you have several salespeople, that they do prepare, you know, scripts, and they train salespeople to follow certain scripts, right?
Look, the reason why you use scripts is because sales is systemizable like anything else. Most people think sales is like art. It's one of those things that you can either do or you can't, and you have to have that natural ability. That isn't the case. When I first started, I had no idea how to sell. I was an introverted kid who ended up getting a job because he needed something to get him through the summer holidays, and he went out and sold. And I had no idea what I was doing. I went to YouTube to figure it out, and I was one of those people that spent hours and hours watching YouTube videos to figure it out. Funnily enough, what I realized was through learning a skill and applying the skill on a day-to-day basis, you can learn anything, and sales is included in that. So what I generally say to people is that the reason why they aren't good salespeople is because they haven't put the effort in. Like most, I mean, there are people that are naturally better, but just like when you go to university, there's always people that are naturally better there too. However, over the course of 4 years, that changes depending on who put the work in. So with scripting is a process of continuous improvement. A lot of people have objections to that because they don't want to sound robotic. They don't want to sound they don't want to sound scripted. The whole word scripting implies that you're scripted, and that therefore puts the fear of being scripted in people's minds.
Right.
Understandable.
And it also makes people believe that they can't think for themselves. Like they'll not know what to do next if things don't follow the script.
Exactly. And here is the thing about active learning. There is no such thing as failure. There is only feedback. So when you have a call and you're asked a question that you weren't expecting, you answer the question off the cuff. You write down what you said and you think about what you said and whether or not there could have been a better response or whether or not there's a story you could have introduced into that explanation to get your message across better and have a better result. The benefit of this is, and look, neurolinguistic programming talks about cause and effect. A lot of people say, yeah, but the customers don't want to buy, or yeah, the market's hard at this time. These are things you can't do anything about. The last thing you want to be is in a business with nothing to do or nothing to be able to do to fix your problems. It's best to be at cause and take a step back and say, okay, let's hypothetically assume, for instance, that I am in control of my own life. How would I go about improving it? And the answer is, if you're not a natural salesperson, if you're not a salesperson that just figures it out and runs with it, you want to have a little bit of a cheat sheet. And the cheat sheet is a script. Of course, people will ask you questions and take you off script from time to time. And as your scripts get better, then obviously it'll take you off less. In my view, a phone call, about 80 to 90% of it can be scripted. And I find the same in a sales consultation. So when you look at it, yeah, sure, okay, you don't want to sound scripted, but you can deliver things naturally. I mean, people go to plays, people watch movies all the time that seem natural. All those words were written out for them. They've just become so good and remembered them back to front that they can deliver it completely naturally every time. Unnatural script delivery is just lack of practice.
Oh, that's an interesting analogy. Very true. You know, actors and actresses learn the lines and learn to deliver them as if they are that person until they become that person is what happens.
Definitely. Yeah. And the first script that was written probably didn't sound anywhere near as good as the thing that they delivered. However, it takes 5 or 6 takes or a few rewrites to get it absolutely perfect. And this is the same business principle that we use in every other element of our business futures, continuous improvement. How do I improve the process to get optimum results? Yet when it comes to sales, people think they can just pick up the phone and make a phone call. Or people think, oh, I'll just send them an email. Well, no one's going to reply to an email they don't know. There's no human connection. There's no rapport. And there's no chance of it from a random email. Sure, some people might be, oh, glad you emailed so-and-so told me that you were going to call. However, sometimes that doesn't happen. But if you get them on the phone, you can still talk to them, and there's a better chance. I actually had a coaching client of mine who, look, he approached me because he charges an extensive amount of money for a service that he delivers. And he put that price on his website because mm-hmm. he kept getting phone calls from people or emails from people about services that they wanted where they didn't want to pay for it. So he thought, I'll put my price on the website. So as a result of that price that goes on the website, only people that are interested will call. Well, nobody called because unless they have all of the information first, hearing the price is scary. So we got him to take the price off. All of a sudden, he was flooded with emails, and he was responding to them via email. Now, anybody that does any market research when you're looking at getting any service done will probably send 2 or 3 email inquiries. Those email inquiries, most people will respond to them via email. The problem mm-hmm. with that is you don't develop any rapport with the client. You're just answering their questions. So I just told him to change the process where he said he's very interested in the project. It sounds great. However, before he can quote on a price or answer these questions, he had some specific things that he needed to know so that he gave him the right information. When's a good time to call you? What's your phone number? All of a sudden, he got all these phone numbers and he started having phone calls with clients rather than emails between the client and himself. And all of a sudden, he had customers galore, and that was a change within a few weeks. The answer is when to pick up a phone is always. And if you can have a script, which is what we worked with him on, it gets all those nerves out. A lot of people take it personally when a phone call doesn't go well. If it's a script, the problem is the process, not you. Therefore, you can improve the process without taking it personally that people rejected you.
Because that is one of the objections people who are not in sales have to sales, is that they do feel they're being rejected. You're absolutely right.
Look, I've seen it happen. And I mean, without using dating analogy, a lot of dating websites will suggest that the best thing to do is to get yourself out there and get better at meeting people, because over time, it's like you develop a muscle. Sales is exactly the same as that. You need to develop a muscle that rejection is just part of the process. Sales is a complete numbers game. So you first have to get used to the fact that you just have to approach lots of people. But if you can have a cheat sheet or a shortcut to a sale, i.e. a script that actually guides you through that process, it takes all the nerves out. Because when you get off the phone call and it doesn't work or things don't go well, you can turn around and say, okay, I need to improve the script. What can I improve to make it work better? What didn't happen right that time that I can change? As opposed to, why doesn't anyone like me? Maybe they don't like the product. Maybe I'm wasting my time here. It changes the whole perspective into a systemized process that you can improve rather than a problem with yourself that it's impossible not to take personally.
Right. So you mentioned receiving a lead via email. A lot of digital marketing, we have those, the forms on the website, or people sign up for your newsletter list, you know, and you start sending out other types of emails to them. So I'm assuming that if you get some sort of feedback online because of these digital email lists that you're building, that you're telling us that we should be picking up the phone to follow up with these leads instead of necessarily having these long email conversations, or even continuing, you know, to drip email to them?
It depends on the profit per sale. So I've got digital products myself that I sell on danandmatt.com. It's just a 10-part video series delivered online to teach people how to find a niche market, how to segment, target, and position yourself so that you don't really have competitors. It's your own market, and then mm-hmm. how to sell to it. Now, with that, there's a low profit per customer, and as a result, I use autoresponders. And right. I use email campaigns, and I ask for email addresses, and I have my own podcast, the danandmatt.com podcast. And that is all a funnel that brings people in. I also have a danandmatt.com/free that delivers two free videos, one on how to find your niche market, and the other one is sales is learnable. It's not a thing you have to be born with. And all of that is about getting people's email addresses to then sell them a product.
Right.
And that's because it's a small profit product. However, when you're selling consultations or coaching, or if you're a ghostwriter, or if you sell a service that, is $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, or even if it's a couple of $100 an hour, people to spend that sort of money like personal connection. The reason why they talk about in a lot of seminars packaging, where you offer something for free, then you offer something for $20 or $30, then you offer something for a couple of $100, then you offer something for a couple of $1,000 like a seminar, and then you offer mastermind groups at a much higher price tag. Because all of this is getting closer to you as a person. Now,
right.
if you only have a coaching product, or if you're only a ghostwriter, or if you're only a PR agent, you have a specific product that you're trying to sell, the problem that you then have is, okay, I've got to create all of these things. But if somebody just sends a message through saying, I'm thinking about using you as a PR agent, you can definitely respond via email like everybody else. However, if you get their phone number and you pick up the phone and you call them, they have a bigger and stronger connection with you than anyone else that responds.
Right.
And that makes all the difference.
Sure. Now, you'd mentioned that sometimes business owners, and this is probably just one of the excuses, that they tell themselves, is that they either have the gift of being able to sell or they don't have the gift. And clearly, you're telling us that it's a learned skill. How can business owners get over that idea that it's a gift that you either have or you don't?
Well, I can take you through a simple set of questions that is, it's very easy to then make a logical assumption. If you were a neurosurgeon, or if you were, you're an accountant or any other profession, you probably have gone to college or you've done some sort of trade apprenticeship. And the question I generally ask is, how many years did you spend learning that? And the
right.
response I generally get is 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, but I got the degree, but I still was kind of green. And then I had to go out and I got 4 or 5 years experience before I felt comfortable. Then 5 or 10 years after that, I decided that, I was strong enough to go and do it myself. So we're talking a lot of years. What investment did you make? Huge amount, sometimes $30,000 for a course, sometimes $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, not to mention all the time that you weren't earning money because you were doing that course.
Mm-hmm.
All of that together is the time they spend using and learning their functional skill. Then you ask, how much time did you spend learning to sell? And the response generally is, well, I spoke to 3 or 4 customers, I found it hard, so I decided I wasn't a natural salesperson. If I walked into KPMG and said, hi, I want to be an accountant, and they gave me a job, and as a result of getting that job, my first day, I reckon, I'd decide I wasn't an accountant.
Right.
And I'd probably have to walk out. There's you can't walk into any legal firm, any accounting firm without a degree and 4 years worth of learning and probably some experience in some smaller firms before you'll get a job there, because they know it's a learned skill over a period of time and experience. Sales is a profession just like any other. If you don't dedicate time, you won't get there. But it's definitely not an art form. It's definitely not something you need a gift of the gab for. It just requires practice. I was anything but a natural salesperson myself. As I said, I learned off YouTube. people just assume that they're not natural, because going back on YouTube or starting to study something again is, you're right, it's difficult. But if they do it, it's nowhere near as much of a time commitment to become good at this. You literally can be a sales genius in 2 to 3 months of dedicated effort and well above the curve in just a few weeks if you put in the dedicated effort of learning around doing your other tasks.
Interesting. Do you have time to hold on for a break? I want to take a commercial break, but I have some more questions for you.
Of course.
All right, good. You're listening to ACT Local, Marketing for Small Business, and we are having a fascinating conversation about sales. And I actually never told Matthew this, but I meet all those stereotypes that he's talking about. I don't like to pick up the phone. I don't want to call people. I don't want to talk to people. I say I don't know how to do sales. I meet all those stereotypes. So I'm learning a lot from this conversation, Matthew, and I know that you out there are too. So stay tuned. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
ACT Local is the place where busy entrepreneurs like you gain more ideas, more understanding, and more knowledge about why and how harnessing the Internet gives them the power to bring their business to the next level. Kaylin returns after a short break with more strategies and techniques to develop your inner warrior. We'll be right back.
Once there was a smart baby boomer that loved her business. She knew that to grow it, she would need marketing. So she went for a search on the internet and came across all sorts of social media. She went on all the sites and opened accounts, but after starting profiles on all of them, she began to feel overwhelmed. To do all the marketing experts told her to do was just too big a task. She needed a change. Because she was a smart entrepreneur, she chose two of the popular social media sites to market her business. But after months and months, it didn't seem to make any difference. And she saw other savvy business owners using different sites here and blogging over there. When suddenly, she noticed more clever baby boomers going to iKaylin.com and leaving so happy, she just had to see for herself. iKaylin.com helped her make a marketing plan to grow her business that wasn't too big and wasn't too little. It was just right. So close to you
right now. Welcome to ACT Local, Marketing for Small Business with your host, Kaylin Amadio. Kaylin helps smart, savvy, and motivated business owners like you kick it up a notch online, even if you've tried and been disappointed before, or technology just isn't your thing. ACT Local will leave you with more ideas, more understanding, and more knowledge about why and how harnessing the internet gives you the power to bring your business to the next level. And now here's your host, digital media maven, Kaylin Amadio.
Hey now, welcome back. This is ACT Local Marketing for Small Business, and I am having a conversation with today's guest, Matthew Pollard. Matthew is a sales pro, is what he is. That's what I'm learning from listening to all of his expertise today about sales and the sales process and how to become a guru of sales, because that's what we all need to do. And I admitted to something before the commercial break that I am definitely one of those people that I don't like to pick up the phone. And I distinctly remember how it happened for me is I was working for, I have an engineering degree. So I was in engineering for many years, and I started out working at a particular company that manufactured something, and I was in the engineering department. And then eventually I ended up in customer service, and I ended up on the phone all damn day long putting out fires in customer service. And I got a real distaste for having to do that. And ever since, I really don't like picking up the phone and talking to people. And I definitely don't like trying to, you know, sell myself or sell my wares. Right. So I have this same, I always called it a phobia, but that's probably a cop out. It's just, you know, an excuse to not be part of the sales process because, you know, I feel like I'm not good at it and I don't like it and I don't like how it makes me feel. And, you know, I meet all those stereotypes that you're talking about.
Look, I think a lot of people do, though. I mean, if you can imagine, I mean, I remember the first time I learned to ski I kept falling in the ice. It was painful. Not only was it painful, I was cold, it was miserable, and I didn't enjoy it. Then it became fun, and I got better at it.
Yeah, right.
Well, actually, I got better at it, and then it became fun.
Right. I was going to say, the other way around, yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing that happens is that you start to, you know, you have to learn. Like, you either learn from the school of hard knocks, which I did in a lot of ways, or you learn by having tuition and classes, and that works too. And, you know, it's just all about expediting the learning curve as much as possible. And a lot of people, if you have the finance to do it, which I didn't when I started, I learned from YouTube and by doing it. Other people, you know, they're in a situation where they can afford professional coaching, and they go and get professional coaching, or they go to seminars. Either way, it's about breaking that learning curve and getting yourself in front of customers and just practicing. And, you know, I'm sure if a person that had a phobia of spiders would, well, again, I know nothing about this, but that is a real phobia of something that's emotional and something that they, you know, it's a physical fear.
Right.
Scales is generally a fear of the unknown and perhaps a fear of the things that they don't know. So putting yourself in a situation where you could potentially not get or get caught out as a non-expert scares people because they care about what people think.
Right.
Which is why we discussed before the break the process of scripting. And you can script a sale you can script a telemarketing call. The important thing is to script absolutely everything so that you have a bit of a, I guess, you're in front of the curve. You're not really competing on the same level playing field as everybody else. I mean, I know for a fact that when I first learned to sell, I found it difficult. I was a brochure salesperson, if you like. Later down the track, I found that people were spending a lot of effort going out and seeing customers, and there's no way they could compete with me. I'd go and see a customer that had 12 brochures or 6 brochures sitting on the desk for different products and services because they were shopping around, and I went, "You beauty, I know I'm going to sell here," because that person's already had 6 to 10 to 12 horrible salespeople in front of them wasting their time, and I will get the sale because that's what I do. And it was just because I followed a script. You follow a process. It's like at McDonald's. If you worked at McDonald's, which I had the misfortune or the benefit of working there for 4.5 years, I learned that if I followed the process, I would result in a successful outcome more often than not. If I didn't follow the process, then I wouldn't. Now, a lot of people decided that, you know, the process was too hard and they tried to figure out shortcuts, and that's how they burned their hand, or that's how they processed the order wrong. So it's the same with anything that you do. And this was the thing I learned about sales. And that following that through into niche marketing was also the thing I learned about in niche marketing, that once I got better and I realized that I could now sell anything, I just followed a program. I then stepped back and said, well, if I market the product better and I look at specific niches and the direction of how I'm going to target my products and services, can I escape a lot of competition? And that made just all the more difference as well, where now we weren't competing on a level playing field where I had a better script. We were then competing on a completely unlevel playing field where I was the only player because I differentiated myself so much from the rest of the players in the market.
Well, I think most business owners can really appreciate the concept of having systems in place, you know, to help them run their business. Complex systems, simple systems, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's mechanized or there's technology involved in any way, just a process by which you can get things done. And in order to run a business, and especially to grow a business, you have to have all kinds of processes in place. And if you look at sales as just another one of those processes that has to happen, I think it's more tangible, and it's something that I can see creating as opposed to something, you know, fearing out there in the ether because I don't know what to do about it.
Look, I'm completely with you. I mean, a lot of people say sales can't be scripted. There are so many things that you couldn't possibly foresee happening. And it's just not true. Once you what you realize is generally on a telemarketing call or a first contact call,
there's maybe 5 or 6 questions that get asked every single time. So just get very, very good at answering those questions. They may not happen in the same order. They may happen slightly different. They may ask slightly different questions. But sorry, they may ask the same question in a slightly different way. But of a whole, it generally comes down to the same simple process. So you can script that. You can script your intro. You can script the way you ask questions. And this is where a lot of salespeople fall down. Generally what happens is they go into a sale and they spend no time building rapport. They're like, hi, yeah, I was told to call by so-and-so. Yeah, cool. And then they go straight into talking about their product. No wonder a customer's not interested. You've got to spend time building rapport. You've got to spend time building trust. You then got to launch into more of an intro about what you're doing and why you're doing it and what you're going to talk about. Then you need to ask questions, because a lot of people are so used to just blanking out when a salesperson calls now because they just want to tell you about the brochure. Well, we're all internet-savvy people. I mean, as you said, you love the internet, and so does everybody, because these days you can do your own research without having a salesperson with you.
Yeah.
The benefit of a salesperson is they can tell you what the true benefits to you are and how it's going to work for you. You can't do that unless you ask questions. And this is a step that most people miss, or they just ask a couple of quick questions and they move into here's the brochure and tool, and reading off the brochure. So asking questions just puts you so far ahead of the game of everybody else, because they're trying to sell a brochure. You're now selling them something that's going to implement in their business and helping them picture how exactly it's going to benefit them.
I would think that you mentioned the word benefit, you know, and you're right about the internet and about all this, you know, the information technology age that we're in is people love the fact that they can get all kinds of information before they ever do have to talk to a salesperson. But I think one thing that salespeople really have to understand is the difference between features and benefits. Because you mentioned benefit, and I would think benefit is the thing that really is going to set a good salesman apart, being able to identify benefits.
Look, the best example, and I'm completely with you, the best example I can give you is if you go into a store and try and buy a camera, people will start talking to you about the magnification. They'll start talking to you about the DPI of the images. They'll start talking to you about the videos, how it can upload to YouTube. I mean, let's just imagine for a second, you didn't start talking about that as a salesperson, but instead, when you walked in the door, or when you called up and asked about it, or when somebody called you, they said, we sell cameras. Now, before I talk to you about anything to do with cameras, I'd like to know what need for a camera you have. What are you trying to achieve? Are you going on a family holiday? Are you a podcaster that wants to do video podcasts? Are you trying to record some videos for your business? You're just trying to take some photos of your products to upload them on eBay. Now, all of a sudden, as a result of all of these questions, just something simple like that, you now know that maybe it needs to be uploaded to YouTube easy, or you need them to be quick uploaded to the computer easy. You know so much more information. By asking, you know, as a consultant, just asking the simple question, what are the problems that you're experiencing in your business right now? And allow the customer to talk, and then ask follow-up questions about the problems that they talk about. I mean, if we had a three-hour podcast, I'd go right through the types of questions to ask. Unfortunately, we're probably a little bit limited. But just starting with something like, and as I said, there's a video on danamat.com/free that gives you a couple of real examples. But just asking something as simple as, what are the problems you're experiencing in your business right now? Or before you go into sell any product or service, understand exactly what they're trying to achieve. Okay, you want this product, or you've asked me to come and see you. What exactly are you trying to achieve by this product? Because frequently, as a result of that, you will find out that they may need 2 or 3 different types of things that you offer. Or you will create enough information, you'll write enough information down that when you talk about it, you will build a completely different sales proposition than anyone else. And that's why my salespeople that I trained always got better results, because people bought off them because they could see the solution working. They couldn't just see a solution.
Right. Very smart. I'm getting a picture in my head of what a smart salesperson does versus everybody else. You're painting a very clear picture for me. So
Well, it's very painful as a salesperson to call up and get told no all the time. It's very painful for a salesperson to drive out to 3-4 appointments a day only to get told no, it's just a waste of petrol and phone calls. Yet I'm surprised by how many times people don't just spend a few hours learning the processes and the systems to a sale so that they're better at it when they get there. Because we don't go to sales to learn and meet new people. We go to sales to make income because it's a business and that's what we're trying to do. I mean, sure, I love meeting people, but that's what we're there to do.
Right.
So let's learn the processes, the systems and the structures so that we can achieve sales much more effectively.
Right. So let's say we have a sales team in place. We have a business. We have a sales team in place. They have a process by which the leads are coming in person or they're coming in online, wherever the leads are coming from. I'm assuming that I, as the business owner, need to be auditing that process. How do I know, or what are some signs that it's time to revamp, it's time to make some changes, that I need to make some updates to what's going on?
So the first thing that I would tell you is that for a training institute in Australia, I within 3 years, I helped them grow to 3,500 clients, and they started with just a few, including some of the major sporting teams in Australia, some national sporting teams, one major national retailer, a couple of really high-level functional corporations, and, 95% business owners was their database. And what I can tell you is, even though I wrote a full script for them, I went out and worked it out, I wrote a full script for them, that script was 9.5 pages long. It included jokes, it included stories, it was everything.
Wow.
Then every few months, I re-looked at it, made changes, because the market changes. People start to take on what you do. So I'd always readdress it to make sure. Just like you would continuously improve, if you're a mobile phone dealership, you would have different trays on your desk to, the different stages of the process they're on. If it's an electronic process, it tells you where it is and what stage. And if you're the IT company that builds that online system, you're always continuously improving it. If you've got even trays on the desk, you're always continuously improving it. You should always be continuously improving sales. What I will say, though, is most people can't do it, or it seems like a monumental task because there is no script. The folders, every salesperson's got a different folder, and how do we know which one's which? We need to first create a system, and there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. What we can do is we can go out and record a dummy sale or a real sale if you've got the customer's permission, if you feel you need to do that, and just record your best salesperson having a conversation with a client that results in a sale. Get them to record 3 or 4 and transcribe the best one. Then look at the parts in the other script, the other sales that he may not have said in the first one, and intertwine those extra features of those recordings into the main script. Now what we have is we have our best salesperson's best script. Now, I'm sure if you gave that to all of the salespeople that aren't performing as well as that person, they would love to know what that person is saying to achieve the result they're achieving, because their commissions are attached to it, their KPIs are attached to it.
Right.
So what I did is, after I wrote this script, is I would go through and train every single salesperson on the optimum script, because what you're doing then is you're mapping excellence across to the lower performing people.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll find is, quite frequently, what those people will do is then take on that script and they'll add a couple of things themselves only after they master it. They should never be allowed to add things until they've mastered it themselves. But then they'll bring their own functional abilities, and the script will continue to evolve until it's just the best script you can possibly have. And you do that over a number of months. But then what happens is you start to get some really successful you start to get success with a lot of customers, and those customers have stories. And those stories are better stories than the ones you have. So you intertwine those into your script. All this time is a continuous improvement process forever for sales, because sales is the most important thing that you can do in a business. Why would you not continually readdress it?
Right.
So we start with just a script, and then we continue to grow it until we get to our optimum.
So it's really a living, breathing document, this script.
Definitely. Definitely it is. And just like a customer service script is, a living and breathing, so should a sales script be.
Very interesting. I want to ask you a hypothetical because I read an article that implied this once. You know the 80-20 rule, right? So let's say I have 10 salespersons, right? I have 10 salespeople. The 80-20 rule says that 2 of those 10 salespeople are responsible for 80% of my sales.
It's a shocking statistic, but an accurate one in a
okay.
lot of cases.
So here's the hypothetical question, though, based around that, is should I be spending my time trying to improve the 80% that's responsible for 20% of my sales, or should I be spending time on those 2 salespeople, making them even better because they're already bringing in 80%? Is there a line somewhere that I should be drawing?
The first thing I guess I should point out is the scariest thing in the world for any business is to have 80% of their income coming from 20% of their customers.
Right.
So because then you've got complete unreliability, because if you lose one customer, you're losing 40% of your customer base. That also applies to salespeople. If you've got 40% of your new customer acquisition coming from one person, or if you've got 10, if you're talking 10 salespeople, you've got 80% of your clients coming from 2 salespeople. If you were to lose those 2 salespeople, those people have got you completely locked in. You're stuck to those 2 salespeople. They all of a sudden start to own the business, ask for more money, and they have control of your financial viability in the future. That is the last place I would want to be as a business owner. So, yes, there is a line. The rule that I have is if a salesperson wants to be a salesperson and they are committed to learning, then sales is a learnable skill like anything else. You should never get rid of anybody that cares so much that they will read the script, they will memorize it back to front, and then they'll listen and go out to sales courses and do all of that. Because, as I said, I wasn't a natural salesperson, and I've seen many introverted people that weren't natural, that high-level corporations and small businesses were going to give the boot, that ended up the best salespeople that any company ever had, just because they were willing to put in the effort. I've been to corporations where we've got rid of out of 10 salespeople, we've got rid of the five and six salespeople because they just didn't care, and they were just coming in for a job and to receive their paycheck, and they were doing enough. However, the bottom 2 were willing to put in the effort, and once we gave them the script and armed them with all of the skill sets that they needed to have to be salespeople, they went flying. So I would always ask the question, do they care enough to put in the effort? And then only after you've given them the script and done what I've already suggested, then you start to think about whether you should get rid of them or not.
Interesting. Very interesting. And I understand that answer. That makes sense, because everyone's an individual, so it depends on what they're willing to do. But I thought that was an interesting philosophical question when I read somewhere online, you know, someone's advice was, why would you spend time trying to raise up 8 people when you can spend that same amount of time making the 2 people even better? But I like your answer better, Matthew.
Well, look, at the end of the day, I'm a big believer in people and people's ability. And I tend to feel that if somebody will put in the effort, then you should be able to teach them to do it. And I have worked with people that are the most introverted people that will not do anything right at the initial stages. But it's just because they didn't understand to do it. If I had thrown a newborn swimmer into a pool and said, hey, go swim, they'd drown.
Sure.
And if somebody doesn't show them how to make the first couple of strokes, they probably would never figure it out.
Right.
So I feel that if you can arm those people with the script, and you've obviously already invested in them enough, I'm not suggesting give them another 12 months. I'm suggesting if you give them the script and they learn the script back to front, that should only take a few days. I mean, most people learn Shakespeare in a few days to deliver for a play to at least an 80% accuracy. So, you know, a week or 2 to learn the script. And then 3 or 4 weeks out actually selling to customers, if you don't see results then you can get rid of them. However, if you put that effort into those people, they will never leave you. And if they start to get results, those are the most loyal people you'll ever have. The top 20% will have headhunters always after them.
That's a good point.
They don't attribute that to their success to anybody but themselves. That's not job security. That's not business security. And I've seen huge businesses collapse just because they've lost their two or three best salespeople, and that was all of their customer base gone.
Right, right. I am fascinated by all of this, but I realize that I've probably taken up all of your time today for our interview. Tell people how they can get a hold of you again. They want to find out more.
Sure, not a problem. Well, look, the best way to get in contact with me is through our website, danandmatt.com. That's DANANDMATT.com. And for your listeners, if you put a /and then the word free, there are two videos there, as I spoke about before, on niche marketing and on sales and whether or not it truly is a learned skill and how you start going about that.
Excellent. So you heard it. You can go, if you want to find out more about Matthew Pollard, who is an excellent sales coach, you can go to his website, Dan and Matt, DANANDMATT.com, and find out more about the services that they offer and the things that they can help you as a business owner and help you with training your sales staff or you individually becoming better at sales. Because, you know, let's talk truth here. If you're in business and you don't have sales, then what are you doing? You're not in business. That's the whole point. You have to be making sales or this whole thing's not working. And if you don't feel that you're top of your game, then you need to go look at danandmatt.com and get more from Matthew Pollard. And he said if you put /, free after that website name, there's some free resources that you can get. Some, you said video, Matthew?
There are two videos there that are available to you. So just there'll be a watch now button. Click on that and you'll have access to two videos straight away.
Excellent. So you have been listening to ACT Local Marketing for Small Business. I want to thank you, my guest today, Matthew Pollard. And remember, we release a new episode every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time over at the website, actlocalmarketing.com. And, of course, you can always subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. And until next time, my friends, I would very much like you to take care.
Join Kaylin for more marketing madness each week on ACT Local Marketing. It will leave you with more ideas, more understanding, and more knowledge about why and how harnessing the internet gives you the power to bring your business to the next level. ACT Local Marketing for Small Business goes live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern and can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and at actlocalmarketing.com. Have a question for ACT Local? Email Kaylin at ask@actlocalmarketing.com. That's ask@actlocalmarketing.com. And she may answer you right on air. Make sure to include your name and business website for a free shout out. Don't forget to tell your friends and colleagues about ACT Local and leave Kaylin a review at the iTunes store. See you next time on ACT Local Marketing for Small Business.